African people are participating in globalization. Ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources. Uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Artificial intelligence puts words in President Biden's mouth he never uttered. But the League of Women Voters say, therefore, can you say lawsuit? Speaking of artificial intelligence, Donald Trump doesn't have nearly as much support among blacks as his deepfake photos suggest. And in our extraordinary journey this month, we visit a very unique boutique where you can't put a price tag on the experience a woman will have there. And good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, a couple of stories in the news this morning. Reverend Al Sharpton appeared on MSNBC's Morning Joe earlier this week and told the host, Joe Scarborough, that Trump was running a white supremacist campaign. I think that he has taken off any cover that he is really running a clear white supremacist campaign, began Sharpton, as Scarborough asked about his reaction to Trump's recent speech in Ohio, where Trump infamously claimed that there would be a bloodbath if he loses the 2024 election. He has stood there and called whites that tried to stop the certification of an election, which is tantamount to trying to overthrow the government. He has called them hostages, while there are real hostages in the Middle East at the same time, Sharpton continued. Imagine you were a family member of a hostage in the Middle East hearing him calling the people that tried to overthrow an election a hostage, equivalent to them. And then he's going to call people of color that are coming from Central Latin America, Haiti, animals, and all kinds of names that dehumanize them, added Sharpton. You may disagree with the policy, but to make people less than human is exactly what blacks went through in America, being called three-fifths of a man, that we are now dealing with different policies based on those that are on the right that want to do it for different strokes for different folks, the Reverend said. I want to remind Donald Trump, he said, in his own family, his in-laws were immigrants who had to be brought into citizenship. So what makes their blood different than somebody's blood from South America who may be seeking a better life? Meanwhile, Trump continues to make history. The former president faces 91 felony counts across two state courts and two different federal districts, any of which could potentially produce a prison sentence. He's appealing a judge's ruling that allows Georgia District Attorney Fani Willis to continue as a prosecutor in the RICO case against him as long as she fires her alleged ex-lover, Nathan Wade. Wade resigned last week from his position as special prosecutor. And in his 23-page ruling, Judge Scott McAfee criticized both Willis and Wade for their, quote, questionable testimony and, quote, bad choices. Yet, he said, Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices, even repeatedly. But the judge's ruling has some on the left turning on Willis, like rats deserting a sinking ship, calling on her to recuse herself from the case. CNN chief legal affairs correspondent Paula Reed sees McAfee's ruling as really a gift to Trump and his co-defendants because they're not going to fight this case on its merits. They're going to fight it in the court of public opinion. Optics matter here, she said. Well, until lawmakers decide which agency or offices will be charged with regulating artificial intelligence, crafty bad actors are pushing the boundaries of what's fair game and what's not. Trump supporters are targeting black voters by creating deep fake A1 photos of Trump sitting cozily amidst groups of blacks, grinning and rubbing elbows. Cliff Albright is co-founder and executive director of Black Voters Matter, and he's been monitoring these actions. Good morning, Cliff Albright. Thank you for joining us on What's at Stake.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
So, how widespread is this practice, Cliff, of artificial intelligence being doctored to make it look as though Trump has loads of African American supporters?
Yeah, well, it's becoming more and more widespread. Of course, we saw the same thing happening in 2016, just in terms of in general, the use of fake accounts, fake bots, fake information. We've always seen, people creating various robocalls or things along that nature. But it's increasing because of AI, right? You're able to get even better looking photos. You're able to get even better looking videos, and these can be found out, right? If people are paying attention. We just saw this happen with the Kate Middleton situation, right? Where people say, "Wait a minute, something doesn't look right." And so,
There's an
if
extra
you're
arm in that picture.
right, extra arms, extra fingers, all this stuff, right? And so, if you're paying attention, you can catch it. But a lot of times this information is coming, it's coming fast and furious. People aren't paying as close attention, and it's being supplemented by other types of disinformation, whether that's in the form of bad polling or media articles that are being placed, or even ads. I was in my car just yesterday listening to ads. It was a Trump ad on a traditionally black R&B station, and it leads off with all these claims about Biden and things that he said about LGBT community, and all of it just false, like proven, like objectively false. And so, but when you supplement that type of disinformation, fake photos, fake videos, right? Fake phone calls, which I know you'll be talking about with Liz in a couple of moments. When you supplement all of this, and then when you get media reporting on it in ways which actually in some ways reaffirms it, right? Because what we know is sometimes the more people hear a thing, even if it's calling it out, the more that they hear it, the more it reinforces it. And so you find the media in some ways supporting some of the fake information. And so all of this is on the increase, to answer your question. And that's the thing, this thing is increasing, and the technology behind it is getting more and more advanced.
It's sophisticated. And as you said, if you're paying close attention, you might detect some of this. But oftentimes people aren't. They just see the picture and move on, or they're scrolling down their Instagrams or whatever, those TikToks, and see these pictures and whatnot and just believe it. So can
That's right.
for our audience, for our listening audience, can you describe maybe one or two of those fake, deep fake photos that are out there?
Yeah, sure. The first one that we became aware of was the one that went viral, and it's of Trump sitting on a front porch with like six young black men. And it's not just the photo, and they're just sitting there like surrounding them, all looking happy, like Michael Jordan just popped up in their community or something. And my first instinct looking at it, and a lot of people, you're looking at it like, there's no way that happened, right? You just something in you says that doesn't, but you're seeing this image. Then you get this whole narrative that started to be attached to it in various posts of, oh, Trump was driving in his caravan, in his motorcade, and they just happened to pass through this neighborhood. Like Trump's driving through any one of these neighborhoods. Oh, but they just happen to be passing through the neighborhood, and he sees these people on the stoop, and he gets out, and they're sitting around just talking. None of that would ever happen, but you've got this whole story now attached to this photo. The other one that more recently started to be circulated was one where he's with, this one is similar thing, but it's more like black women, which we definitely know isn't happening because black women are Trump's kryptonite. But he's in a photo largely surrounded. I think there were a couple of black men in there, but largely surrounded by black women. It's the same kind of thing. Like they're just hanging out at a club or something, just having a good time. And so, what becomes really dangerous is when somebody in our community, maybe an influencer, maybe a hip hop artist, but somebody who gets it and then they put it out. Because now what happens, right? Now it's not that, the Daily Caller or some or Fox News has put this out. Oh, I received this from Sexy Red, right? Or I received this from Ice Cube or something like that. And so now it adds an extra layer. So you've got the deep fake itself, but now you've got it supplemented by the fact that you're receiving it for somebody that you actually know and trust, right? And
And
so
yeah, but also Sexy Red, isn't she a Trump supporter, or am I a victim of this fake misinformation as well?
I don't even know if she's so much a Trump supporter as much as she had a viral video go around talking about basically talking about the stimulus checks. And she was like, hey, we need Trump back because, when he was there, we got these stimulus checks. And the truth is she's not alone in this misperception. Again, this is disinformation as well. But she's not alone in it. And so you have some people that are Trump supporters putting out some of this information. Like they are knowingly on his team. And then you have some people that just have bad information, but they're putting it out very loudly, right? But who can actually be corrected and then come back and do some good. So there's a fine line between those two things.
Well, let me ask you this, Cliff. Is the fear that some people may be persuaded or convinced to vote for Trump because other blacks are doing so? They wake up and say, oh, I think I'll vote for Trump because all those black guys seem to like him. Maybe they know something I don't know. Is that the fear here?
Yeah, I mean that's the concern, because you do have some people that, they don't watch, they don't do what we do. They don't watch MSNBC, CNN all day, right? They're not listening to Democracy Now and to What's at Stake, right? And so, they don't have all of the information, but they do know, oh, well, my cousin said such and such, or this artist or whatever who I like. Now that doesn't mean that we're only guided by that. That's why the levels and layers of the disinformation are important, because it's not just that you heard Sexy Red, it's that you heard that, then you heard that fake radio commercial that I said, then you saw this photo, right? And then you heard somebody in the barbershop. So there is a concern that it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, especially among folks that aren't getting a lot of information from other sources.
And so what are the facts, real quickly, because I know we're gonna, what are the facts? There are an estimated 47.9 million blacks in the US. Of them, how many are A, likely to vote at all? B, how many are likely to vote for Trump? And is support increasing among blacks for Trump?
Right. I've been saying that you've been seeing a lot of polls coming out talking about black support for Trump being somewhere around 22%. That does not match anything that we've seen and heard as we travel around the country and have conversations, even amongst different age groups, young and old. And there is a lot of younger black voter dissatisfaction with the administration for a variety of reasons, including the war in Gaza. But nowhere are we seeing like one out of five black people, young or old, suggesting that they would vote for
Go
Trump.
for Trump. So
If
basically,
anything, it's probably closer to the 10 or 11% that we saw in the past two presidential elections for him.
and finally, what if anything can be done to stop this? Does Black Voters Matter have a strategy to stop it, slow it down?
Yeah, that's a great question. One, everybody can follow us on our social media, Black Voters MTR, on all platforms. But the most important thing, because it's not even just about Black Voters Matter, the most important thing is that this disinformation succeeds in a vacuum, right? When we aren't having the conversations that we need to be having with our community, including those members of our community that are not so-called super voters, right? They're not super engaged, right? But that's where this information lands most effectively. If there's no void, if we are doing the work that we need to do, if we have the resources that we need in order to do the door knocks, the texting, the phone calls, the radio ads, then this disinformation can't land on fertile ground. So yes, we are doing all of that, and we are an entire ecosystem, particularly in certain states that, we call it, we say Black Voters Matter 365. We do this work 365 days out of the year. That's how often you have to have these conversations. And when that happens, the disinformation cannot be successful.
Cliff Albright, co-founder and executive director of Black Voters Matter. Cliff, thank you so much for being our guest this morning on What's at Stake.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, the League of Women Voters has entered the political fray. Last week, they launched a federal lawsuit against a Democratic consultant, Steve Kramer, and two companies for creating robocalls mimicking President Joe Biden's voice using artificial intelligence. Liz Tintorelli is president of the League of Women Voters, New Hampshire chapter, the state where recipients of the calls were discouraged from participating in the state's primary election last January. Liz Tintorelli, welcome to What's at Stake.
And thank you.
So Liz, who were these fake calls targeted at, Democrats or Republicans?
I think they were targeted at Democrats because it mimicked the voice of President Biden. And it said, basically, save your vote for November. Don't bother voting in the primary. Now, savvy voter understands you can vote in both the primary and in November. But somebody who is perhaps not that savvy, not that frequent a voter, and might have gotten that call, might consider, he told me it doesn't matter. I don't need to vote right now. You know, and these calls came about a day or two before the presidential primary in January here in New Hampshire.
So we should say that New Hampshire has a semi-closed primary, which means if you're a registered Democrat, you have to vote for the Democratic ballot, and the same with registered Republicans. However, unenrolled voters can choose either ballot. This year, President Biden was not on the ballot for the Democrats. You could write him in, but Trump was on the GOP ballot. Now, a lot of this probably had to do with the fact that Democrats changed the calendar for the first primary election to South Carolina instead of New Hampshire because they felt it better reflects the diversity of the party. But New Hampshire Democrats bucked the DNC's calendar change and held your first primary anyway. You held your primary first anyway. So Democratic consultant Steve Kemp and company wanted the Democratic voters to boycott that primary. You think that's basically what was happening here, Liz?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what their motivation was. It's true that we went ahead with our primary because it is in state statute that we hold our primary before any other state. So we went ahead and did it. The Democrats in New Hampshire waged an active write-in Joe Biden campaign. So that's what voters could do if they got the Democrat ballot. And you're quite right that undeclared voters, members of neither party, have the right to choose on election day which ballot they want. And that's the largest group in New Hampshire. The number of registered Democrats and Republicans is just about equal, but there are more undeclared voters than there are Democrats or Republicans. About 40% of the state are undeclared. So that may have been some of the people who were targeted as well.
So if they were trying to suppress the turnout, how was the turnout?
The turnout was very good. I think it was close to 50%. I didn't check those numbers recently, but we were very proud of that turnout. It's hard to get people to turn out in a presidential race like this. We got them.
So will New Hampshire be sanctioned and lose delegates as a result of its decision to go ahead and hold their primary first?
I think the party is still discussing that. Mm-hmm. There was a proposal that some of their delegates would not be counted, and then would not be counted in the first round. I don't know that it's come down to a definitive statement yet. Mm-hmm. I do know that delegates are planning to go to the convention.
Okay. So what exactly did the robocall say?
I hate to repeat it on air because it makes it sound like news again, and it's not. It was the AI faked voice of Joseph Biden saying that save your vote until November when it counts, that the primary doesn't count. And that's it just isn't true.
So why did they use artificial intelligence voice? Why didn't they just get Biden to do the calls? Would he not approve of that? Would that have been illegal?
Well, certainly Biden would not have said anything like that. Biden understands, as do all the rest of us, that votes count and that you can vote in both the primary and in the November election. So someone faked his voice because it's a voice we recognize. And people got the call and were thinking, all right, it's just before the primary. The president is calling, asking for my vote. And instead, the call is saying, don't bother voting. What is that if not voter suppression?
Now, what are the legal grounds that you're suing Mr. Kemp and Life Corporation and Lingo Telecom? What are the legal grounds?
We are seeking a permanent injunction against them using artificial intelligence and robocalls in order to intimidate voters or suppress the vote. And the lawyers could give you a better answer than I could. I am representing one of the primary plaintiffs, League of Women Voters of New Hampshire. The National League is also a plaintiff. And that's because we worry that this could be done in other states. It, of course, could be done in the November election. We don't want that to happen. We don't want any party, any candidate taking advantage of easy AI technology to create fake images and voices and then to make robocalls to affect the election.
Mm. Any idea what Kemp's and two companies, what their defense is going to be?
No idea.
Okay. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization. Was there much debate within the league as to whether or not to sue?
No, there was not.
Okay. Liz Tintorelli, I apologize, president of the League of Women Voters, New Hampshire. Thank you for being our guest this morning.
Thank you.
On What's at Stake.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. Apply online now, no later than Friday, March 29th, by going to the website www.diversecityfund.org. You can send email to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are online to answer all your questions. See www.diversecityfund.org or call 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Diverse City Fund ofrece subvenciones para agentes de cambio de color en la capital de la nación. Financiamos el trabajo de justicia racial y social por y para líderes de color en D.C. Solicite una subvención en línea hoy, al más tardar el viernes 29 de marzo, visitando el sitio web www.diversecityfund.org. Fechas y horarios y grabaciones de las sesiones informativas pasadas están en nuestra página web. Para preguntas, visiten www.diversecityfund.org o llamen al 202-743-0130. Eso es 202-743-0130.
And welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, in this month's segment of Remarkable Journeys, we're going to visit a clothing store, but it's not just an ordinary clothing store. It's a truly remarkable, truly unique boutique. It's called God's Treasures Boutique, and it's founded and owned by Jacqueline Younger. What makes this boutique so unique is the fact that a woman can walk through the door penniless, homeless, broken in spirit, perhaps abused sexually and possibly even suicidal. But when she exits God's Treasures Boutique, she's taking the first steps towards a transformation of her life. Good morning, Ms. Jacqueline Younger. Welcome to What's at Stake.
Good morning, Verna. I'm sorry. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing quite well. Now, your website says a visit to your boutique can transform the trajectory of a woman's life. Before you get into how that happens, tell us who shops at your boutique.
Okay. Women who are who I used to be. Just a little background of my life. I come out of a life of prostitution, drug addiction, homelessness, domestic violence, rape, molestation from childhood, and things of that nature. And I just remember when I was out there in the streets, especially as a prostitute, I would stand there at 14th and K Northwest. I don't know how many listeners remember that area, 14th Street. It was a strip there of prostitutes, pimps, drugs, you name it. Well, I was one of those prostitutes out there, and I remember standing there not feeling like this is where I belong. In fact, I would have visions of me standing in front of a lot of women and speaking. I didn't know what that was about back then, but that's what I would see. And I remember being there and just saying, what am I doing here? Like, how did I get here? You know, I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be who I was. But I think most folks can relate to, you can be something, not want to be it, but don't know how not to be it. And that's where I was. All I knew is the prostitutes were going like around 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I remember times I would stay out all night till daybreak until the workers who worked downtown would come out, because I would want to see women who were dressed in suits and had their briefcases going to work. That is what was inside of me, but I didn't know how not to be it. And so I say women who used to be, who are what I used to be, there now, they come to the boutique that I have here, because I even remember wanting to look like the women that I would look at. Even you, Verna, when I met you on Christmas Day of 2023, just sitting there at the table eating with you, you know, I was thinking back on that life. But in the Bible, you know, it said that your gift will make room for you and bring you before great men. And then at times when God say men, he means just men and women. And Verna, you are a great woman. And to have had the opportunity to sit there and break bread with you the following week, go to the movie theater with you. See, those kinds of things don't supposed to happen with people such as myself or people who have the past that I have. But because my life has changed, the trajectory of my life has changed so much. In fact, that's how God's Treasured Boutique was birthed. Because I remember being out there looking at women, wishing I can even look like them. Didn't know what their life was like, but just wish I was not in those fishnet pantyhose, but was in a suit with a briefcase. I wanted to be that, but I didn't know how not to be. A person can go through so much trauma in their lives, because later I remember being homeless, and then I went into this health center. It was in Fairmont Heights, Maryland, and I just walked in there because I'm wondering, how did I end up like this? And I remember going in wanting to see a doctor. You know, they had psychiatrists and all there, and I wanted to see somebody to see what was wrong with me. And so they asked me, they said, well, do you have an appointment? No. Do you have insurance? No. I'm homeless. And God is so good, because this doctor was walking past the receptionist desk, overheard the conversation. She said, I will see her. And I remember her taking me in her office. Now, I'm 19 years old at the time, and she just takes me back to my childhood. you know, and I thought, you know, sharing it with her, you know, how I was molested like 8, 9, 10 years old by my godfather. In fact, he would give me 25 cents. And I, the sick thing was, I couldn't wait to see him to get that 25 cents. She told me I pretty much was programmed and that I need to be reprogrammed pretty much. But after reading the Bible, I discovered what she was saying to me was I needed my mind renewed.
I I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but tell us, Jacqueline, about that 18-year-old Jacqueline. How did, what happened in your life that got you to that corner of 14th and K Street? You just mentioned the sexual abuse by your godfather. He was pretty much priming you to be a prostitute by giving you money after he abused you. But was there a mother in the scenario, in the picture? Who were you before that started to happen?
Very depressed as a child. I remember going into my bedroom and asking God to either kill my parents or kill me. Because I was just so unhappy. Because, you know, I was thinking, why are they treating me this way? And look, I love my parents. They're gone home to be with the Lord, and God told me that they did the best that they could do and all that they knew. In fact, I wish I knew him then like I know him now, because I would have been praying for my parents instead of cursing my parents. But just in that time, I just remember being called the B word all the time. I remember my father, because I would dress very seductively as a teenager, and my father told me, the only thing a man can want to for is your body. You know, I remember being raped and coming home, and I didn't tell them because I knew they would say, I told you so, you know, that kind of thing. So it was just a lot of mental, verbal, and physical abuse. By the time I left home, you know, they say, low self-esteem. I had no self-esteem. In fact, I was attracted to abusive men. I remember a gentleman bust my head open, took me to the hospital, and I got stitches, and he was dropping me off, and I'm like, where are you going? He said, why do you want to be around me? I just bust your head open. I said, I love you. You know, it was like just wanting to be loved no matter what. And because I was so accustomed to abuse, that's what I was attracted to, or that's what I drew to me. And in fact, if I can say this on the radio, sexual intercourse, the only way I could be satisfied is to imagine me being raped.
Wow.
That was the only way I would be satisfied sexually, is imagining I'm being raped.
Okay.
That's where I was at that time.
Now, let me ask you this. Did drugs play a role in your life at that time, Jacqueline?
Oh, yeah. I ended up on, you know, PCP during that era. Ended up on crack cocaine. Crack cocaine and PCP. In fact, that's when my life began to turn around, actually, because I, you know, I was crying out to God all the time. Believe it or not, I was raised in the church, so I knew of God, but I didn't really know him. But I remember when the men were laying on top of me as a prostitute, and I'm selling my body, I'm saying, God, help me. Like, I don't want to be this person. You know, help me. And for years I did that. Even when I would hold the crack pipe to my mouth, I would say, God, don't let me overdose. Don't let me this. Don't let me that. You know, I don't want to be this. Help me. I got to the point where I told God, if this is how my life going to be the rest of my life, I'd rather die. I ended up in a psychiatric ward because I started doing crack so much. I ended up in a psychiatric ward. They said I was suicidal. But before I went up on the floor, my grandmother's sister came there, and she just prayed over me. You know, she said, you know, you cannot die. You will live. You know, your daughter needs you, this, that, and that. And God heard her, because when I got up in there on that floor, I told them, I said, you got to let me out. I need to go back to church. I need to rededicate my life. But I had to stay there for 3 days. But when I got out of there, this is when my life turned around. I went to church and I rededicated my life back to God. And I was there every day, the doors open. I mean, all the time. And I started reading the Bible. And there were women in the Bible that had my story. You know, I read about Rahab, who was a prostitute. She had a house full of prostitutes. And she ended up being in Jesus' bloodline. I read about Mary Magdalene. I read about women who were me. And I started saying, okay, God, if you could use them, God, do the same thing in my life. I read scriptures like what Satan meant for evil, like the things that came in my life that was meant to destroy me, God would take those very things and he would use it for his good. Hmm. And that's exactly what he's done.
So now you said that these women that come to your unique boutique are the woman that you were. Can any woman just walk through the door, or do they have to be invited? Is it invitation only?
It is invitation only, and there is not just women that walks off the streets. I partnered up with different organizations that have drug rehab, residential centers, homeless shelters, domestic violence. The women that attend these programs, the women who have made a decision to change your life, they enter into our boutique, and it's more than just a boutique. I know you probably went on the website and it spoke a lot about the boutique, but when we first started, that's what it was. It was the boutique. So it's different components now. We have the Exodus, which is based on Exodus 9:1, when God told Moses to tell Pharaoh, let his people go. In our case, we're telling whatever they're going through, let our sisters go. We also have what we call the GLIMPSE. And the GLIMPSE stands for going live into my promised strategic essence. Like, we just don't tell women where they can go, who they can be. We actually put them in that atmosphere. Like, for instance, when Angela Alsobrooks was voted in as county executive, I was notified that she had wanted some homeless women to attend. And so we got homeless women from the shelter. We got them a room at the Gaylord. We had hairdressers come, makeup artists, the boutique dressed them, and they attended her inaugural ball. If anyone want to visit our website, you'll see pictures of Angela and the homeless women. And I remember her very first term, you know, at her inaugural ball, she said, where are the women? They were standing right there. You know, but they just blend it right in. And people say, okay, what is this about? Okay, you take them to these places. Well, when I was out there, certain men would take me to certain places, like places I just didn't feel like I belonged, but I wanted to belong. And I would never forget where they took me. Like, it stamped my brain that this is what I can do, actually. This is what I can become. Because, see, once you see, you can't unsee. So we give them what we call a glimpse. We take them to overnight stay at bed and breakfasts. We just took a group of women in a drug rehab program to an Airbnb out near the harbor and had an afternoon brunch and workshop there. So there's much more now that we do. We have the Renewing of the Mind series. Because God told me back then what was wrong with me was my identity was stolen. Like, I really did not know who I was. And even after I came out, I still sort of, you know, was wrestling with that. Because I remember being at the D.C. Chamber of Commerce, the job that I had, they chose me to represent the company. And I go there. And I'm sitting there at this big boardroom table, and everyone around the table look like Yale and Harvard graduates, and there's me. And all I'm thinking is, wow, a few blocks from here is where I prostituted. It took a while for me to get out of my mind who I was back then and who I am today.
Mm. So how much education did you have? And did you have any marketable skills other than, you know, what you've already discussed, the prostitution?
So I did, yeah, because of the abuse and all that, I was at home. I got pregnant at 16. I had a daughter at 18. I left home. I had 4 months before graduation. I was on a roll in high school and all of that, but I dropped out of school. I had a child. We ended up living in a 24-hour laundromat. We ended up in shelters, just all of that. So I never finished, but there were several times I would try to go back, and I just never went back. However, I do have a master's degree. I ended up attending the University of Adversity. And a lot of people might say, well, I've never heard of that university, you know, but it's in the kingdom. And God first presented me with my high school diploma. He then presented me with my associate's degree, bachelor's degree. I now have my master's degree in restoration and working on my PhD. So is it from an actual university? No, but it's from God, because of what's inside of me, and this might sound a little arrogant, what's inside of me, I know God can use, because he's done it, to change the trajectory of women's lives who most people look down, have thrown under the bridge, who's forgotten about, who's talked about, and that kind of thing. So that is what I do. That's what I have.
Can you identify, Jacqueline, one or maybe two events that actually changed the path that you were on that led you to the life that you're leading today?
Say that again, please.
I said maybe identify one or two events that actually changed the path that you were on, sort of changed the trajectory of your life that put you on the path that you're on today.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell everyone all the time, because I know nothing else. It was God. It was God that when I went back and rededicated my life to him, I didn't go to any programs. I didn't go to NAAA. I went and I surrounded myself with women of God, not just women who go to church, but women who had a relationship with him. And I became her. I became this woman of God. But then there are other situations that has happened in my life. I remember being invited to be this lady's guest. She was doing this workshop where she, if you had a business, and at the time I became a business owner, I was a successful business owner for over 13 years. Well, I went there to try to better my business. But when I got there, she says to me, "You're one of the guest speakers." I said, "No, I'm not one of the guest speakers." And I just brought my cards. I brought my tablet. I'm going to take notes. She said, no, you're going to be one of the guest speakers. Now, before Donald Trump became president, he had this group, and some of his people were there. In fact, they were a guest speaker. It was two of them. They were tag teaming. They had their PowerPoint presentation. And she looks at me and she says, "You're after them." And I didn't even have anything put together. And this changed my life. You asked me what event changed my life. This changed my life, because I used to be overly concerned about the fact that I did not go to college. I wanted to go to college. In fact, I wanted to be an attorney. That was my dream. But you don't dream and wake up wanting to be a drug addict, prostitute, or any of that. But that's what I became. And on that day, she said, "You're after them." And I'm looking, they got this PowerPoint presentation going on. There's two of them, they're tag teaming. And I'm like, "God, what am I going to say?" And I open up my little tablet to try to hurry up and write something down. And all of a sudden, what came up in my spirit was, "Close the book. Because I'm going to put the words in your mouth myself." And he actually did that in the Bible with Jeremiah, because Jeremiah, in Jeremiah 1:9, God had told Jeremiah what his mission was going to be. And Jeremiah didn't think he can do it. And this is what God said. This is what Jeremiah said. "Then the Lord stretched out his hand and touched my mouth. And the Lord said to me, 'Behold, I have put the words in your mouth.'" And he said he was going to do the same thing to me that day. So when she introduced me as if I was Michelle Obama or Oprah or someone. I'm like, "Who's this lady talking about?" But when I get up there, God surely put the words in my mouth. And after every couple of sentences, everyone was on their feet clapping. Now, these are people who that used to intimidate me because everyone introduced themselves. There was an IT person who wanted their own IT business. There was an attorney that wanted his own practice and a doctor. There were people like that. There are people that used to intimidate me because I'm a high school dropout. And it was just amazing.
What did you think about?
They were on their feet clapping. The lady who was over the event had to take the mic and say, look, please, everyone sit down. Let Ms. Younger finish. You can ask her questions afterwards. On that day, God showed me it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter what you have, what you don't have. My will be done in your life. And he said, do what you can, and I'm going to do what you can't.
Okay.
And he's been doing that. I've been, like I said, I was a successful business owner for over 13 years. I've been a supervisor. I've been administrator. And I'm not telling anyone, don't go get your education. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this to those who don't have it. Don't think for a moment that if you don't, you can't be used because you can.
So now there is one story I want you to tell really quickly that you shared with me prior to this interview about the trash bags. And it sort of identifies, it sort of puts into context your relationship that you say that you have with God. Do you remember the story about the trash bags that you told me?
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you, I'm very hesitant. Well, I used to be. Okay, I'm feeling a little better about it now because a lot of people can't handle this. But because I know it's true, it's happened to me. Well, the successful business that I told you I had was with me and my husband. Unfortunately, we separated and he shut the business down. He took my car because it was in his name. I had absolutely nothing. And I'm taking my granddaughter to the daycare. And I noticed that the kitchen trash can was full of trash. Okay, let me empty this before I leave. I go in the cupboard where I always go, and there's the box, but it's empty. And all I say is, wow, I don't have any trash bags. So I told my granddaughter, I said, but come on, let me get you to the daycare. I take her to the daycare, which is like 5 minutes, 6 minutes from where we live. I come right back. They are trash. Oh, thank you, Jesus.
Take your time.
They are trash bags all over my front yard. Now, they put in boxes. They were, you know, when you pull a trash bag out of the box and you have to shake it because it's all creased and folded. They were like that. They were creased. And they were all over my front yard. Now, mind you, I didn't tell anyone that I needed trash bags. I didn't call anyone. I didn't go to the neighbor. And I was back home in 11 minutes. And they went, as I was picking up the trash bags, what came in my spirit was when the children of Israel, when they were hungry, and God rained the food from the sky, and he literally said to me, I'm raining you. He said, in fact, I am Jehovah Jireh, your provider. I'm going to take care of your every need. Now, people say God works through people, and he does. But what God said to me was, even if I have to rain it from the heavens, I got you. I got you. And he did. He did. Because I didn't know how I was going to make it at the time. A dear friend of mine called me and said, God told him to pay my bills until I can pay them myself. A girlfriend of mine called me and said, God told me to empty my bank account and buy your car. That's how I lived for a while. And so and that was only like 5.5 years ago.
Okay.
And so,
now I want to very briefly. When a woman enters your boutique, she's given designer brand clothing. You have a stylist. Uh-huh. She gets her personal stylist, and I'm assuming there's food for thought for her. What other things do you provide for the woman to help her change the direction of the life that she's on?
So, yeah, and again, I always go back there because when I asked God, what do you want me to do with this organization? He said, just remember. And so I remember being in the streets, and this man, he bought me this dress from Alcott Andrews in the 80s. It was $425, and every time I put it on, I had a Cinderella moment, right? Every time, for some reason, I had, and I know it was just a dress, but I had a Cinderella moment. Mm-hmm. And God said, remember that feeling you had? He said, this boutique is going to consist of high end. In fact, for the last 7 years, I don't know if people remember Daryl Green from the Washington Redskins, his wife, Jewel, she's been donating high end, thank you, Father, beautiful, brand new designer clothing for the boutique. So the ladies come in and first of all, they're looking at the clothing, they're looking at the price tags. So we got a pair of pants in here that costs over $600, and she's saying, I can't afford this. I can't afford this. We have a dressing room. I said, go in the dressing room. I just want to see what you look like in it. She goes in the dressing room. She comes out, and she's looking beautiful. And each time a woman put on a beautiful piece and come out, it reminds me of my Cinderella moment. And I say, honey, can you afford free? Because it's free. So now I've had people say to me, how come everything have to be new, high end? And it just takes me back to the Bible, the book of Luke 15, when the prodigal son came home. Come on now. When the prodigal son came home, his father said, like, give me the best robe. Come on. Put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And then he said, just don't bring me a calf. I want the fattest calf. Mm-hmm. He wanted nothing but the best. So right. God said to me, when your sisters come in, though they're prodigals, though they've been in the streets, just like the prodigal son, I don't want them to have nothing less than the best.
Mm. So, Jacqueline, if someone is feeling, if someone listening this morning is feeling there, but for the grace of God, go I, but they don't have designer clothing to donate, do you accept monetary donations, and are the donations tax deductible, and where should they send them?
Okay. As far as tax deductible, not yet. Now, we've been doing this, God and I, since 2008. Since then, he's brought awesome other women aboard. And again, I was a successful business owner. The business got shut down. I almost felt like I was starting over financially. A pastor, a local pastor, just put up the money for the 501c3. So the 501c3 right now is the paperwork is being done. So if they want to donate, unfortunately, at this time, they cannot do so. They cannot write it off.
Oh, can't write it off. But they can still donate, but they can't write it off.
They can still donate. Mm-hmm. We have meet and greets where they, in fact, we're having one this Saturday, but it's all full. But we'll have others where they can actually come out and not just hear, like they're hearing what we're doing, but actually be able to see what it is that we do here at God's Treasures.
Mm-hmm. I noticed Maryland Governor Wes Moore was in attendance at one of the gala events on your website. Do you receive any money from the state or the federal government?
I haven't yet. Now, from what I've been told, there's grant money and all, but again, you know, you need that 501c3, to my knowledge. That's what you need. And so that's why, you know, we're working on that. Governor Wes Moore, that was actually at Angela also Brooks, her second term at her inaugural ball. We had taken women there. Now, quick story, we're talking about writing things off in 501c3. This last year for her inaugural ball, the women, I didn't have all their shoe sizes in the boutique. And, you know, I call Steve Madden Corporation in New York. Now, when you call corporations like that, you need a 501c3, you need this, mm-hmm. you need that. That's how I know God is on my life. And there's lots of favor. And he said, everywhere my feet tread, he has given it to me. Anywhere I call, and again, this is not arrogant. I'm not being arrogant at all. I just know what God has given me. And I call Steve Madden's corporate office. told them what was going on. The ladies didn't have shoes. They said, where are you located? I told them. They said, we have a Steve Madden store at Tanger Outlet. Get the homeless women, come on, God, and take them there and get them brand new shoes at no cost. And so even though we haven't had our 501c3, and again, Daryl's wife, Jewel, she's been donating for the last 7 years or so. And the thing, I just went to their house a few weeks ago and got thousands.
That's unfortunately going to have to do it. Jacqueline Younger, the steward of Unique Boutique, God's Treasures Boutique. Congratulations on your transformation of your own life from a homeless person to a successful young businesswoman today, and for transforming the lives of women on your path. Thank you so much for being our guest this morning, Jacqueline Younger. Remarkable.
I appreciate it. If anyone want to visit our website, godswithanstreasureswithanfinc.org.
Thank you. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of What's at Stake. Thank you to all of my guests, Liz Tintorelli with the League of Women Voters in New Hampshire, Cliff Albright, co-founder and executive director of Black Voters Matter, and of course, Jacqueline Younger, steward of God's Treasures Boutique. And thanks to our engineer extraordinaire, Michael Masella. I'm Verna Avery Brown, and in the words of the late Nelson Mandela, they always said it was impossible until it was done. Up next, wake up and stay woke. It's Dr. E. Faye Williams. Ashe.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15 to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, founder of the Haiti Support Project, known as HSP. If you've been listening to WPFW, you're aware that Haiti is on fire with gangs threatening to seize power. HSP is hosting a forum for leaders of the Montana Accord movement in Haiti to discuss the urgent need to organize to compel the U.S. government to respect the sovereignty of the First Black Republic by supporting a Haitian solution to the crisis. Thursday, March 21st, 7 o'clock p.m. at the historic Metropolitan AME Church, 518 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. Doors open at 6:30. Free and open to the public? That's a forum on the crisis in Haiti. Thursday, March 21st at the historic Metropolitan AME Church. For further information, visit the website ibw21.org. That's ibw21.org. For the love of Haiti, I'll see you there.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. Apply online now, no later than Friday, March 29th, by going to the website www.diversecityfund.org. You can send email to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are online to answer all your questions. See www.diversecityfund.org or call 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Diverse City Fund ofrece subvenciones para agentes de cambio de color en la capital de la nación. Financiamos el trabajo de justicia racial y social por y para líderes de color en D.C. Solicite una subvención en línea hoy, al más tardar el viernes 29 de marzo, visitando el sitio web www.diversecityfund.org. Fechas y horarios y grabaciones de las sesiones informativas pasadas están en nuestra página web. Para preguntas, visiten www.diversecityfund.org o llamen al 202-743-0130. Eso es 202-743-0130.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western governments.